copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
My topic here is, you saw on your notes, is that of the church's response to what the response of the church should be to protecting a human life. And I will start with the Expo experience here at the Forum several years ago when it was for the first time organized.
2 years ago.
Was it 2 years ago? Okay, you have seen what the Expo is. So 2 years ago, we decided to have our own table just to see how leaders in Europe, are what they are thinking about pregnancy care centers as, a ministry. And I'm very happy to say that we have shared our booth with a Romanian organization, with the same mission, and Roxana was with me. And I was glad to share the space and price. And so after that afternoon was over, I came back, and actually immediately in the elevator, I had this thought that I was too harsh on churches in Serbia and their lack of involvement and interest in the issues of sanctity of human life, because leaders were approaching our table. This is a leadership conference, and they had very little knowledge about, let's say, this practical part of pro-life work, which are pregnancy care centers. And actually, in Europe, we don't have many pregnancy care centers. I'm talking about evangelical starting pregnancy crisis centers. So I will start with my own experience, and that is why this makes me I cannot be in any way judgmental or to criticize in any way. I'm coming from a very liberal background. Abortion was, of course, a topic that was talked, in my family, and my cousins, and it was very well accepted among us. I became a believer when I was 19 years old, so my family was totally atheistic family, and I had very liberal viewpoint on all of these issues. When I became a Christian, this has changed, but I have to say that I have spent probably 10 years of my life as a believer, again, not knowing anything about this issue. And who is coming from our part of the world, Balkan countries? We were very much, I think, preoccupied with the things that are going on in our part of the world then. I mean, war, refugees, hunger, economical sanctions. So no one was discussing any moral issue. So I want to say that abortion as an issue is still not a political issue at all in our country. It is not being discussed. I have never heard a politician addressing this topic or any of these moral issues, because we are still dealing with the issues of the past. So I went to many conferences, leadership conferences, church planting conferences, trainings, Bible school. I have MA in theology, all those things. And still, the issue of sanctity of human life was nowhere. I don't know if you can really follow this. This is the truth. So when I first heard about this, and it has to come from outside of my country, I heard from a friend, Canadian friend, who started working in a pregnancy care center, and I heard what she's doing, and it was so out of context for my thinking that I needed so much persuasion from God, almost the whole year, of just opening my eyes to this subject from, you know, why would you, you know, invest your time in this issue? Can you believe this? I'm very honest. To being very passionate about unborn babies as our neighbors, where I am now. I want to say that when I approached my pastor, senior pastor, with the idea that we should do something about this, he was first very confused. It was obvious that he never could consider this issue. He respected me because we were, you know, church planters, heroes, and he would say, "Why would you, you know, waste your time? You're doing church planting. Why would you waste your time on this issue?" And then second thing was, why would we disturb people in our church? We know that there are a lot of people who have had an abortion. We are ex-communist country. Now statistics are 150,000 abortion, 65,000 babies born. We don't want to disturb people. This is an emotional topic. And then the third thing, aborted babies go to heaven anyway. So I was really sure that I will not get much support in that context. And this is, you know, the beginning of my journey in this area. So I'm not, I because of my, you know, I've been so much involved in the church work, you know, so much for the last 20 years. So for 20 years, a full-time worker. I'm not in any way, you know, I don't want to criticize the church. You know, the world is doing that, isn't it? We are seen as hateful. We are seen as judgmental. We are seen as the enemies of science. We are seen as we are waging the war against women. They love to tell us that we are hypocrites. They love to declare that they hate organized religion. All that is, you know, where we are. And someone said yesterday as a report from their small group that church is not seen only as outdated, but now even dangerous. So, you know, it would be bad. I wouldn't feel good if I would be the one who would criticize the church. I really love church in general, and my imperfect new plant church of 50 people in Novi Sad, Serbia. I love church. Please understand that. I don't think there is nothing more beautiful in this world. And the church is doing an amazing thing in the world globally. Nobody's doing it better than church. And Jesus loves his church. We know that, isn't it? You know, after Peter's great confession about, you know, who Jesus is, Jesus says, "On this rock I will build my church." And the actually, he thinks highly of his church. The picture is of very determined, triumphant, invincible church. The gates of Hades will not overcome it. So nobody is doing the better work globally. That's what I want to say. And church is doing that in a way that it is not boasting about the work. You know, the church has the attitude, you know, there is nothing good in me. All the love, all the compassion is because he first loved us. But with saying all this, I have to say that when we think of Christian ethics in the society in which we live, and especially when it is the issue of abortion, we have to realize that something has gone terribly wrong when so many have managed to stay so unmoved for so long regarding the destruction of so many of our unborn neighbors. it seems like something has happened that impaired the ability of church to see and denounce abortion for the evil that it is. And pro-life movement really is in need for a pastoral influence and leadership. There are pastors who really faithfully blow Ezekiel's trumpet on this issue, but not many. And I have seen people involved in pro-life ministry who are very discouraged, and you know, sometimes they develop some kind of bitterness because they have somehow abandoned even hope that they can engage the leadership of their church in this issue. But this is, you know, something that I see. And what the Word of God is saying to us in James 1:27 is that religion that God, our Father, accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress. And if you think of the unborn children, I have recently heard this, and I really like that thought, that no one is more orphaned than the unborn. Okay? So if we really want to start responding rightly to the issue of abortion, definitely we need to start to think rightly about abortion. So what kind of issue is an abortion? That's the question that we need to answer. And even in speaking in this setting, in this group of people, I'm always aware that this is a very difficult and sensitive topic, subject. And to many people, this is a very personal issue and invokes maybe painful memories. So I always want to talk about this issue with a lot of grace and compassion. And in the context of Christ's amazing redemptive work, you know, and it is said in Isaiah 53:5, but he was pierced for our transgression, he was crushed for our iniquities, the punish that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed. And this is the spirit in which I am always addressing the topic of abortion. I, in my day-to-day work, I work with women who have had an abortion. So there are wonderful materials that can lead this woman from a situation of regret, despair, to beautiful journey to faith, because she needs forgiveness. She needs Christ. So there are materials available. Those are post-abortion Bible studies. And we have translated several of different ones to our own language. So what kind of issue is abortion? In many countries, it is some people in the church would think this is a political issue, and because of that, it's off limits for the church. That is not the condition, the situation in my context, in my country. But it is, for many countries, this is where it is going in that direction. It is a political issue for a lot of countries, but more accurate, it is a moral, spiritual issue that has been politicized. And every moral, spiritual issue eventually will be politicized, like war, marriage now. You know, that is how things are going. But nowhere in the Bible we are prohibited from exerting political influence. And to be silent because we have this fear that we would appear too political is really to ignore some of very clear commands from the Bible For example, from Proverbs 31:8, where it says, "Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute." Okay. Others see abortion as an irrelevant issue for the church. Okay, and if you have been part of the church planting conferences and church growing movements and seminars about it, irrelevant is a big word. You know, a church wants to be relevant. But my question is really, how relevant is the church that ignores the death of, let's say in UK, probably around 600 per day? In my country, it's 500 per day, innocent children. And how relevant is the church that ignores commands like rescue, speak up, expose, loosen chains, and all that? But this weak response from the church actually is evidence to all of us that for church, for most of the churches, this issue is just another issue on the list. So Mr. Greg Kokel, I think he was speaking, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name right, he was once at the forum and the plenary speaker. He said, "For most Christians, abortion is a yawner." Okay, that's what he said. I think he's right, because on the list of social injustice, abortion ranks at the bottom. Because most of the people are silent, pastors are not preaching and teaching about that, and the Christian colleges or faculties are not really inspiring and equipping young people to be advocates for unborn. And the mindset is a little bit like, don't do it. You know, it's wrong. It is sin. It's bad. But, you know, it's a sin, but like a gossiping or overeating or things like that. Maybe I'm, you know, just judging upon, not judging, just having these conclusions from my own context. But what it has been also said, and I like this, is young evangelicals today are passionate about fighting for rights of the poor and needy, for the orphan, fighting for the injustice of sex trafficking, but are strangely quiet on abortion. In this way, our selective social justice looks more like selective social injustice. And I would say that it is very easy to see abortion as just another issue when you don't have to see abortion. I remember like it was yesterday when I, for the first time in 2003, I saw a videotape of the film Eclipse of Reason. It was 2003, and this was the abortion of 16-week old baby, still in the mother's womb. And I was shocked with what I saw. You cannot think any more ever again what you've been thinking about abortion before that moment. This child was alive at the beginning of this video, you know, moving. And then at the end, this child was the most barbaric manner imaginable. This child lost its life. So we have to be a little bit harsh on ourselves and let our eyes see what abortion really is. And being an evangelical believer in the Orthodox country, we also have a little percentage of Catholic people, very few, but they are doing a good job in really educating their young people about the sanctity of human life issue, at least in Serbia, Catholics in Serbia. Because I have met women, they became evangelical Christians from Catholic background. They all know they were in a very crisis situation health-wise. All the doctors were suggesting that for them to do an abortion. They said, no. My priest showed me film. My priest explained this to us. I will never do this, go through this. And I don't see that, you know, with our evangelical community. So just to say, abortion is an intentional, unjust killing of an innocent human being at most vulnerable stage of development in the most barbaric manner imaginable. And abortion is an insult to divine authority and crime against humanity. So we come to the thinking of what then is, what kind of issue is abortion. It is a defining moral issue of our time. There are other issues, of course, but this one is very important. And this is moral duty of every Christian, every church, every pastor. But I want also to say that abortion is a gospel issue. That is my point, my viewpoint. That's how I see it. I love this unborn baby as my neighbor. I love the mom that is facing crisis pregnancy as my neighbor. And really, I want to, you know, treat them in the right way and to defend and to value and to protect. So if we think of the guiding principle, you know, some definition, we can give definitions about sanctity of human life. Those were new for me, I have to say. And some of them came to my life quite late, as I shared with you. But I'm glad I understand now that every human being is created in the image of God. And this is where our value comes from. And in the issue of migrants and every other issue, we saw the issue of end of life. This is our beginning in the first chapter of the Bible in Genesis 1:27, where it says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. So this is our base. We see that the value of human being is really based on something that is beyond our characteristics or abilities, and that it is rooted really in the essence of God himself. And that's why we have this obligation to defend, protect, and value. And then in this age, for a long number of years, the issue was, you know, what does that mean to be a human being? And actually, this is a core question if you want to embrace this sanctity of human life ethic. And to be a human being means really to be part of the human family. And we know that life, biologically speaking, starts at fertilization. And every human embryologist today would say that that is a scientific fact, and that this is where life begins. But what is dangerous is that really society is trying to redefine this definition. So then the in a way, human, to redefine what it means to be a human being based on some very subjective criteria. So we have moved now, I don't know, you have probably heard, into these new arguments about personhood. So only certain human beings can be given the personhood status. And again, that's very decided upon some arbitrary standards. And for someone, it will be viability, when a child can live independently from his mother or her mother. or it can be self-awareness, which is very dangerous because that is the road toward infanticide. Or what about unwantedness? We need to always think about what is the spiritual source of this disrespect for human life. And I love how Jesus is saying in John 10:10, how our enemy is working. He says that our enemy is coming to steal, to kill, and to destroy. And if we think, you know, what, whom? Well, us who are created in the image of God. You know, he is really motivated by hatred toward all the image barriers. So in this spiritual context, we can clearly see all those examples in the society where Satan temporarily really succeeds in destroying God's creation. In my country, there is a lot of talk now about violence. Violence in schools, domestic violence. But the root is, again, sanctity of human life issue. We stopped seeing each other as beautiful creation of God. Can I say creation? Yeah, so we stopped that. We are not in awe when we look at each other. That is why we can be violent to each other. That is why we can sell people. That is why we cannot recognize the value of an unborn. So this restoration of the ethic must start with the church. It's to me, it's somehow obvious, you know, because I think that the nation that really is trying to, the nation who abandoned God, it is very hard to restore this respect for his creation. Christian philosopher Francis Schaeffer, he says that this is an epic battle, this disregard for the sanctity of human life. He called it an epic battle. He says that on one side are those committed to defending the sanctity of human life, and on the other side, those who support quality of life. And he says that once the value of life was defined based on our worth to the community as evolved animals versus our standing as persons made in the very image of a holy God, we certainly begin to slide down a slippery slope of diminishing worth. When we can abort and therefore kill an innocent unborn baby while still in its mother womb, because we say it is not a person, it is we who lose humanity, our humanity. Just if you stop and think, like we know the number of abortion throughout the world is around 45 million abortions per year, and just think about the fact that the most dangerous place for a human being at the moment is not war in Syria, ISIS state, all this that is going on. The most dangerous place for a human being to be is mother womb of a mother, like woman's womb. How did we come to that point, that is the dangerous place for a human being? So what is the really responsibility of the church? I think, of course, we should pray and organize prayers. And then we need those preaching and teaching that condemns abortion as a sin. And I don't know if preachers here or pastors, and you can encourage your pastors, are they aware that, you know, by preaching about this, teaching about this issue, they are directly saving lives. We all want to be, I don't know, I see that in my boys, they want to be superheroes, they want to save the world, huh? How about preaching about this, and then you can really, and my son preached this year for the first time. I'm very proud mom. But this is directly connected. In my church, so that was in the beginning of my work, because that was never addressed, we have abortions among young people in our church. It was for me, a young lady, she visited me in my home. She was 17 at that time, and she was sitting in my living room, and she was chatty like girls are. I knew her since she was a little girl. And I can see, you know, that she's, you know, restless a little bit. She talks about some boy that is older than she is. You know, he invited her to go to the holiday together. And, you know, I see that something is going on. And I knew in my heart before I asked her and before she answered. I just asked, have you had an abortion? And she broke down. She cried for 2 hours without stopping. And that was many months before I asked this question. And here she is taking from her bag, so she's having that in her bag all the time, the first report from the doctor when she didn't know that she will go through an abortion. It has a little ultrasound picture with a little dot and due date, you know, of when the child will be born, estimated, you know. She's broken. She doesn't know where to go with all these feelings. And if we are not addressing, these things will happen. Some statistics say, we have only the statistics from the States, is that 30% of born-again Christians are going through abortion. And they are in our churches. And we cannot pretend that this is not happening. So, pastors, I want them to be heroes, to save lives, just by preaching about this, teaching, saving the sheep that is not born yet. How about that? And I'm just thinking, you know, if we cannot convince people in our church not to abort their children, how we will ever convince those outside of the church? And yes, some people would think, well, you will cause offense to people if you open this subject in the church. And maybe you will lose them. You know, they will stop coming and they will not become Christians because you have offended them, because you have spoken something about their sin. But isn't that what it's supposed to bring people to Christ, who can forgive the sin? They first need to be, you know, persuaded, that they need to be convinced of their own sin. And in the same time, I want to say that we need wise and intelligent sermons on abortion issue. Very gentle, very compassionate. And then people will find Christ, because this is also a gospel opportunity when we speak about abortion. So what is happening? I will go later on in that. So we know that we need to speak the truth in love, even if this truth is hard. And just to think in this way, we are afraid to offend people who have had an abortion. How about, you know, thinking about offending those who are scheduled to die? Or how about offending Christ by our silence? Those are some of the questions. We have the speaker this year for plenary sessions in the morning, very good speaker, and he also wrote a lot on this issue, and he wrote on the issue of church as being a conscience of society. And actually, the verse is taken from Ephesians 5:18, where it says, have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. So I love this, and I love how Mr. Piper explained it. You know, it's so simply. If we just obey the first part of the verse, have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness. By the way, this is the argument of pro-choice movement. They would say, don't like abortion, don't do it. So we can happily live our lives, you know, we walk in the light, we don't do those things. But no, the emphasis is on the second part. It says, but rather expose them. You know, it's like you have shared in your section in the previous presentation in the making news that you exposed the evidence of how bad and dangerous is euthanasia. We are called to expose the fruitless deeds of darkness. If you think of abortion, it's very dark. Also, when we think of this forgiveness and healing, we actually make it impossible for people to heal who are in our church, sitting there. And do you know, we have paralyzed people. They cannot do any ministry because they know, you know, they have something that, you know, and it's not preached about. My pastor speaks about adultery. My pastor speaks about lying. My pastor speaks about all kinds of issues. But because this is never addressed, I am the worst person in my church. And those people are not volunteering to serve in the church. They're not healed. So the silence leaves them in the lonely prison of guilt and shame. And they need the forgiveness Christ offers. And when abortion is exposed as sin and confessed as such, this forgiveness becomes possible. How the Apostle Paul wrote, godly sorrow brings repentance that leads to salvation and leaves no regret. Also, we have to be ready to equip. That is my mission in the next year, to equip young people to really be, you know, ready to give answers in a rightly manner. Because people are talking about abortion more and more. And in my country, I'm saying in my country. In your country, maybe that is the case for a long number of years. But in my country, we are beginning to talk about abortion publicly. But not many Christians are equipped to really defend the Christian worldview on this issue. So there is work to be done. I was part, and that is for me always interesting, how to cooperate with different groups who do have the same aim. Like they don't like abortion, but they are so different in the approach. That is something I would like also to talk with some people who are here. I have been part of some debates that was very, unpleasant experience, where I liked more this doctor next to me who does abortion, you know, than the pro-life community from Orthodox Church who was very violent, very aggressive, you know, and they said they only agree with me, and I said later on to this doctor, I'm so ashamed they agree with me, because it was so crazy what they have said. I mean, I have nothing to say about that. I think we should be radical, you know, don't get me wrong. We should, but not to insult, to use bad words, to all kinds of, those are not believers. They call themselves Orthodox pro-life movement, but they're not believers. They were very, this was the most unpleasant situation in which I was. Or I would get a call, and yes, we are all for cooperation with different organizations. We can be stronger voices for life, you know. And then you get a call from someone, and he said, okay, I want to organize something in our capital, a big, big conference, and, you know, I need for speakers and to get the attention of many organizations, and I will not go into there. And then while he was still on the phone, I Googled his name, and the first thing came up was that he was arrested because he had bombs on the gay parade, you know, against the gay parade, you know. Just, okay, I will need to consult my board. So, you know, we need to train people. How will they give intelligent answers to pro-choice arguments? And, of course, in the churches, I want to say that we also need to teach our children to value life. So whoever is involved in Sunday school for children, they need to make that also as a priority. You know, to teach children to value life at this very early age. And all of these things can be explained to them. There will be less violence in schools if many children pass through that kind of curriculum, where they are taught to value each other. For the purpose of this presentation, I have asked my colleagues, co-workers from our network, to answer to me some of these questions. So I've actually asked them to answer what should be the response of the church in protecting human life. I've asked them to explain how the relationship with church and pro-life ministry looks like in their country at the moment, and what are the steps they have taken to improve that connection. What are the challenges? What are some great moments they have experienced in the work when they did the work together with the church and leadership, with the blessing of the leadership of the church, and so on. I have asked a lot of questions to my co-workers. We have created, by the way, a network. It is still unofficial. So it's not registered. It's called XU for Life, like ex-Yugoslavia for Life. So we have been in the same country for until 15 years ago. So we know each other's culture, language. We can share resources. We are having conferences together. All of those centers started after our center, so they see us as a few steps in front of them. So I'm involved in a lot of teaching. So there is one center in Slovenia, one in Croatia, two in Bosnia, two in Macedonia, and two in Serbia. So they have come up with great answers. I won't read them, but I just want to say that I'm grateful that because of this presentation, I have asked these questions, and now we have come up to wonderful ideas that we will try strategically really to work on them so that we could improve the connection with our churches, evangelical churches. I did something last year that was for me an important step. We have, of course, Serbian Evangelical Alliance, so I went to their large meeting where a lot of pastors have come from all over Serbia. So I introduced the initiative of having a Sanctity of Human Life Day, like some of your countries maybe have a Sanctity of Human Life Day, like one day in the year. And so this was the first year that has been organized in evangelical churches in Serbia. And just to confirm to you what I'm saying is that when they have got this email that they are encouraged to organize this, they all called us to ask, you know, do we have any materials? Do we have sermons ready? Do we have, what can we give them so that what should they share with their church? So I love that, you know, but you can see how much work we had we have ahead of us. And I just want to say that God has placed very great value on those whom society has shuffled aside. We remember that Jesus served with a great compassion. And he healed people with compassion. And we are his hands and his heart to this desperate searching humanity. So I don't want to be the one who is failing a human being in utero. That's, you know, because I don't want to be silent and to fail another human being. And I just want to encourage me and others that we should not become weary in doing good. And maybe I won't see great, fantastic changes and wonderful campaigns and in my lifetime, but certainly we are preparing the way for the next generation. I'm so excited about young people and what is coming. As an encouragement, I have a little video that we can, I don't know, what can I do? what should I do? This is not also on, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would just say that the practical pro-life movement is a beautiful part of pro-life movement. I do not think it's possible for us to speak on a high level or about you know, issues regarding the beginning of life without these pregnancy care centers who are doing the work every day for hours. We see women who are in crisis pregnancy situation, and we are there. I spoke with someone today. It's almost like you are counseling someone who wants to jump from the bridge. That's the feeling. That's responsibility. We are very much trained how to really listen first carefully before we open what, you know, options and before we start talking something. But it is, it gives you really, I know now that I have something to bring into the really higher levels because of this then a decade of day-to-day work with crisis pregnancy situations. So this is one of our clients. So just to press.
Prošlo leto, došla sam u Izabere život da uradim test za trudnoću. Sumnjala sam da sam u drugom stanju, što je test potvrdio. Za mene je bilo nemoguće da pomislim da rodim to dete. Bila sam stvarno iscrpljena. Kod kuće sam već imala devojčicu po 4 godine i dečaka od 7 meseci. I naša financijska situacija je bila mnogo loša. Mi živimo u 27
square meters.
A moj muž tada ne imao stalan posao. Razgovarala sam sa Vesnom, sjećam se kako sam non-stop razmišljala kako ću odmah zakazati za potpis. Kad sam stigla kući, drhtala sam od nekog uzbuđenja i panike. Nekoliko dana sam bila u takvom stanju. Potpuno u zamci razmišljanja da je za mene abortus jedina opcija. Ali smo onda sasvim iznada počela da mi dolaze u misli reči koje mi je Vesna govorila, o kojima sam mislila po ceo dan. Zašto ne bi ovdje redniku dala šansu za život? A kad je moja malena kći rekla mama, pa zar nije lepše da nas je troje nego dvoje, tu je bila glavna prekretnica. 29. januara rodila sam sina, zove se Mihajlo. Pogledajte kako je divan. Sad kad ga gledam, ne mogu ni da zamislim naše živote bez njega. Toliko ga volim i zahvala sam dobro na podršci koju sam primila ovdje u centru Izaberi život. Uz njih sam učila u vrijednosti života i ja se izvinjavam. I stvarno, sada kada njega vidim, govorim tu i drugima.
So this is our client, just one client story. And in my country, many abortions are done for financial reasons. You got the story. She has small children, very small. The one is only 6 or 7 months old, and she's pregnant again. And, you know, it's a crisis. You know, they live in 27 square meters, and her husband is at the moment without job. And... you know, how can we encourage people like that? And she brought so many clients to us. You would not imagine after all her experience. But let me tell you something. At the moment, she's pregnant again. And it's a crisis. Okay. okay? I'm sharing this just to pray for that. So, sometimes what we can do is offer help. Are we aware that when someone has a need and you just promise to that you will care for baby's needs in the first year? I'm talking about diapers, very simple things. Diapers, wipes, and baby food if it's needed later on. And if I promised that, and this woman was thinking, and she said later on, when she spoke to her husband, she said that that meant a lot to him. And so can you count the cost in for 400 euros? You know, we can encourage someone not to go through abortion. Things like that. So there are many practical ways how a church, how we as Christians can get involved and be seen as people who love life, who are promoting culture of life. It doesn't have to be that you have to be a pro-life worker to be, you know, but there are even books, I don't know, 50 ways how you can show that you are pro-life. You know, there are so many ideas. If you can sit in your church and you say, okay, we will have a meeting and let's think of the ideas how we can become a church that promotes the culture of life, you will get so many ideas, and no one has to do what we are doing on a day-to-day basis. But what about just talking positively about adoption, I'm sorry, as a beautiful option to abortion, which in our country is awful option. What about just changing that? What about opening the door of your home for the pregnant woman? By the way, we have started also a maternity home. We have now two women, two babies, and a 7-year-old daughter. This is the beginning, a 7-year-old girl. So this is the beginning. We want to grow. But this is a fantastic way. You know, you met this woman and you are a perfect stranger to her. And no one comes to the maternity hospital after she has had a baby. And she didn't send a single text message to anyone that she has had a son. And you come with the flowers and everything, but you are a perfect stranger. But then, 3 months later, you are so important in her life. And Jesus becomes so important in her life. I'm doing Bible studies 3 times a week. I am a freak. 3 times a week we are going through the Gospel of Matthew. It's beautiful what God is doing. And so that's what I said. It's a gospel opportunity. Gospel issue, gospel opportunity. So there are ways, you know, how we can, just you can come up for your culture, the answers, many answers to the question, what can we do? What can I do as an individual to be the one who is ready to be a voice for life in our culture? Thank you so much. You were very kind to me.